Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Louder than the belt of Patti LuPone, it's Unsung Heroes. My voice acting is sensational.
That's amazing. You should consider a career in vocal performance or podcast making. Has anyone asked you about that?
What about using my voice to make money?
Yeah, or like recording a podcast or something.
Yeah, someone mentioned it once, but I think it's a bit weird, to be honest, so I wouldn't dare. Hello! Welcome hello. To another fantastic and highly anticipated episode of Unsung Heroes, our every now and then segment where Tommy and I wage war against each other in a battle of
wits and musical prowess. Yeah. And poorly established improvisational skills.
Exactly. We're experienced in that. Zip.
I'm nervous, Jimmy.
It's a really nerve-wracking thing. This is exactly where I was last time. My heart was going. I didn't expect it. I was sweating.
This is no good. Jimmy has a real show this time, and yep. He's going to give me what? Intentionally vague bits and pieces of it? I guess I don't know.
Indeed, I'm going to give you the title of the show. I'm going to give you a couple of the hit songs along the way, and you're going to tell me all about it.
Because I'm a musical theater expert.
Exactly. You will be able to glean. I mean, well, last time it was quite interesting. You know, I mean, I came quite close to a lot of the real stuff. I may have intentionally picked songs that are completely ambiguous, so you may not do the exact same, but hey, we'll see.
This is the most unfair competition. It truly is.
It really, really, truly is, but oh well, I'm excited.
That's what makes it fun.
Yep, I love a good power. This feels like a great power trip, especially compared to last time, where I was literally sweating. We suffer for our art, people. That's really true.
We do. Every day.
Okay, Tommy, are you ready?
I was born ready.
Okay. It's quite a short title.
Okay.
Yeah, are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
Okay, Tommy. I want you to tell me all about the musical called Rob Roy.
Of course, Rob Roy. Jimmy, this one is a deep cut with me. I experienced this, I must have been, I don't know, 4 or 5.
Right.
And my grandma was babysitting me. And she has this old, like, hand crank gramophone that she used. We called it Grandma's Gramophone. Clever title. I was clever.
That's
from a
cute.
Young age.
You were punning from a really. This is amazing.
And one of her most well worn vinyls was of Rob Roy.
I love it.
One of those golden oldies from the 1920s, and it was a hand cranked gramophone. So I might know some of the songs a little slower than you do, but. Rob Roy, of course, he's that old train conductor, Rob Roy, who was he was on one of the first locomotives to have 16 wheels. They called it 16 Wheel Bertha. And Rob Roy was the good old conductor of old 16 Wheel Berth. Because it had a 16-wheel berth, too, so that's why 16-wheel Bertha.
That makes sense.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. It's very clever. And Rob Roy was the first conductor to pilot Bertha all the way from New York to Philadelphia. Because it was the 1920s, and, we didn't have the rest of the country by that point.
I know exactly how long that is.
Yeah. I mean, it's as long as, interestingly enough, it's about as long as the show. This is a unity of time experience here. So it's very on the 20th century, but, from last century.
So is this where 24 got their inspiration of doing it just in real time?
Absolutely. They stole it from Rob Roy.
I heard that. I did hear that somewhere. That's amazing. Well, Tommy, obviously you do seem to know it really, really well. You've picked up on some of the subtleties already, you know, 16-wheel mm-hmm. birth, 16-wheel Bertha.
Absolutely.
What a gal. Why not tell us about the opening number? Obviously, you know, it's called We Are Connected.
Yes.
And yeah, just tell us all about it. Because yes. You know it really well.
So We Are Connected was really revolutionary for its time. Rob Roy was one of the first musicals to kind of anthropomorphize trains.
Yeah.
You have Bertha, of course, but you have all of the different train cars as well. Stan, Leroy, Jenkins, and Sally, the caboose. And we'll get to her later, of course.
I mean, obviously.
And, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber thinks he did it first with Starlight Express, but this was the first time. So
yep.
Bertha and Stan Leroy Jenkins and Sally,
yep.
They all come out as they're in the train yard and getting prepared for this long journey. And they sing, We Are Connected,
mm-hmm.
just like as all train cars are. And it's, you know, it's a really inspiring number, I think. And it kind of alludes to the... you know, I think the through line of this whole show that we do all exist as one, like train cars on a steam locomotive.
Yeah.
We are connected.
Yeah. They're really, really hanging with those big themes right
yeah,
from the start.
Exactly.
Right from the
and
start. That's amazing.
I do notice you omitted the parentheticals before. This song is Choo Choo, We Are Connected.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But that's
which, you know, there's been debate about that for years since the original and the revival. Do you include the Choo Choo? Do you not include the Choo Choo?
I personally go without it.
Yeah.
I just like the straight up, We Are Connected. That way, yeah, there's no ambiguity. You know exactly what you're talking about. And also, it's marketable beyond the musical.
I guess that's true. You don't want to hear Celine Dion singing Choo Choo, We Are Connected.
No, we do not.
But just normal We Are Connected, probably okay.
Exactly. Absolutely. It's such a good number. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
So, obviously, We Are Connected, great opening. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us about one of the... I think... Is this one of my favorites? Yeah, it was definitely the first one that really resonated with me.
Oh, yes. Oh, I know exactly the
you
one
know
you're thinking of. Yeah.
Or the Lee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Or the Lee.
Or the Lee.
Or the Lee. Let me... Or the Lee. I'm so glad that one moves you as much as it moves me.
Like, first time I heard it.
First time. So, or the Lee, we meet business tycoon, Mr. Monopoly. He owns a giant spaghetti business.
Mm-hmm. Italian,
you know, Mr.
right?
He's Italian. Monopoly.
Yeah.
And he has to make a decision, Jimmy. He's getting on old Berth with Rob Roy at the helm,
mm-hmm.
And he can't decide. Is he going to take his spaghetti fortune with him on this journey, or the Lee, his girlfriend, Lee?
Mm-hmm.
And he just can't, you know, oh, mamma mia, oh, will I take my spaghetti, or will I take the Lee? You know, it's really a moving song, and you're right there with him. Like, he's got all this spaghetti that he wants to transport by train, but then Lee seems like a nice gal. And interestingly, Lee doesn't sing at all in this show. She never talks,
she never sings.
She's really an enigma. She's really a mystery.
Yeah, and it's quite, I mean, it's good. It gives good staging opportunities and things like that with Lee.
And you know, lots of nonverbal communication there.
Yeah. Now tell us a bit about why, because it's obviously really, really important why he gives her the definite article. It's, you know, it's not just Lee, it is the Lee. So tell us why he chooses to do that.
So that's, you know, been... I think people have talked about this for a long time, and depending upon who you ask, you might come up with different answers.
Mm.
I really think that he's chosen the definite article for the Lee because, well, there's the comparison to the spaghetti,
mm-hmm.
and so there's kind of this objectification of the both of them,
right,
I think there's something nice about that objectification. It's not downplaying. It's saying that he cares about the spaghetti as much as he cares about the Lee, but I do think, Jimmy, some of it is just a way to kind of shoehorn that rhyme in, get the same kind of scanning there, and I think that might have been the initial decision, and a lot of the analytical academic talk around the definite article in Or the Lee,
yeah,
has been manufactured, when really this is just kind of a cheat, a lyrical cheat, if you will.
It can be quite disappointing, and that's one of the reasons why I fell out of favor with it after the initial listen.
That makes a lot of sense.
And honestly, some of the academia that's gone around this number in particular is really beautiful. Yes. I know the New York Library has a fair few
there's
tomes.
a whole section just dedicated to Oh the Lee. Not to mention all of Rob Roy and its analysis and discussion. This is a deep show, Jamie. Yeah. I'm glad we finally have a chance to talk about it.
I know, exactly, because we just it's too, I don't know, it's just too much for a happy hour.
Exactly. You know, it's too much. But it does, it seems so us, you know? Oh,
absolutely. I mean, we're connected. We like spaghetti.
Yeah.
We've been
you
to New York.
You used to be called Leroy. I used to be called Sal.
Yep. And Jenkins, one of my best friends.
Can't forget about Jenkins. He's the dining car. Jenkins likes to eat. It's a funny joke they play. You know, he's always got like food in his hands.
The spaghetti number with Jenkins.
Oh, so funny.
It is.
So funny.
So great.
Because, of course, spoiler alert, Mr. Monopoly chooses the spaghetti and they leave the Lee back in New York. And, of course, they put all the spaghetti inside of Jenkins. And, you know,
he has the best
Jenkins
type.
Loves it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting how they do the kind of stage how he eats.
Yeah.
Obviously, being a train car. It's really quite cool.
Well, it was quite the budget suck on this production. They had to boil something like 200 pounds of spaghetti each night for every production. That was real spaghetti they used back in the 1920s.
Exactly, because people, when Skylight did it, they were like, oh, look, she's, you know, cooking on stage. How revolutionary. I'm sorry, it had been done.
It had been done back in Rob Roy.
Yep,
yeah.
Those are the days. Fantastic. Well, I think it's time to, I guess, really get into the meat of the show now. Okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're obviously talking about Annabelle number 6.
Annabelle number 6.
Annabelle number 6.
You know, there's an interesting story behind this, the title of this number, Ginny.
Yeah.
It's not a story-motivated thing. Mm. The authors of this show actually had written 5 different versions of the song before they got to Annabelle number 6, and it's kind of a meta theatrical reference, you know, and callback. But that doesn't play too much into the song. Annabelle was Rob Roy's old train before Big Bertha. And Rob Roy and Annabelle, you know, it's a great memory song. It's a down-home country song. You know, like, me and my Annabelle, oh, she would drive so well. And talking about, you know, the time they used to have as like a local commuter train in New York. But you know well, Ginny, that Annabelle didn't make it. She broke down. She skipped the track and fell over, and the breakdown train couldn't handle her.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's kind of a sad song, but it's hopeful too.
Yeah.
Because it's about Rob Roy's dream for his, you know, new friend, new train, Bertha.
Bertha.
Who, of course, you know, we missed the townspeople song where they're all about like, oh, this train will never make it. But Rob Roy's going to pilot it in memory of Annabelle, which you really get down to his heart in this song.
You really, truly do. It's really beautiful. And so you were saying, obviously, this is the kind of sixth version of that. Do you want to maybe, because I know you know it really well, do you want to maybe sing us some from what Annabelle 2? That's probably favorite.
Well, see, Annabelle 2, if you listen to it, it was kind of a Dixieland jazz number, which didn't really kind of have the right sort of mood and tone for this kind of memory of like a train
it's basically a poignant moment as well.
Yeah, but I do understand why you enjoy it, because it is so jumpy. You know, it's like, Annabelle, oh, she's great, Annabelle, never wait for Annabelle, always on time, Annabelle the train. But, you know, It doesn't, when the transition to her dying didn't really fit Annabelle 2. You can see why it took them a long time to get this song right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I quite like the kind of sharp transition. I thought it was very, like, you know, Me in the Sky style.
Yeah.
It just comes out of nowhere, left field.
Yeah. Yeah. Might have been too ahead of its time, you know. Maybe if they... Maybe if we see this on Broadway soon, and you know we have a habit of hitting shows that make it to Broadway.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe they'll bring back Annabelle 2 or 3, and you know,
gosh, that'd be so that good. Actually, revival.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I'd love that. Maybe just bring them all back.
Just do like a whole mega mix.
Yeah,
Annabelle 1 through 6, the mega mix. You already got a built-in rhyme there.
It's done.
That might be it.
At
we
least,
might have to. We might have to write someone.
At least some bonus tracks on the cast.
At least some bonus. Yeah, get Idina Menzel to sing it or something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so, well, I think it's time to talk about one of the show's biggest dance numbers. Because obviously this is early days. We were so big into our dance, you know.
Exactly. This show is no exception.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the big train numbers, the things that they're doing. Like you say, Starlight Express, eat your heart out.
No, it's crazy. And with people in train suits and people playing the people on the trains and how do they intermix?
Exactly. Like, but it was really believable. You know what I mean? You totally saw them on that train.
They strove for just reality and like realistic and realism in theater with this show.
Just so, so impressive. So one of the kind of biggest show-stopping dance numbers, He's a Magician.
He's a Magician, of course. You know, when I was younger, I always used to skip over on my grandma's gramophone, He's the Magician, because it's hard to visualize it. But I think it's really grown on me in my old age, especially, you know, talking about musical theater and kind of learning to appreciate these things more. But He's the Magician. It's this rousing number, and it starts from the tiniest of places. Mr. Monopoly is, you know, sleeping inside Jenkins, to guard over his spaghetti.
The spaghetti, exactly. Yeah.
And wakes up one morning, and the spaghetti is gone.
Gives me tingles. I literally got tingles.
Where the spaghetti was is Rob Roy. He's taking a break from piloting Bertha just to eat breakfast. But of course, it's a big confusion, and Monopoly thinks Rob Roy ate all the spaghetti for breakfast. And he's like, how could you do that? Eat all the spaghetti for breakfast? You must be a magician. And Rob Roy's like, no, I'm just an old train conductor. And he's like, no, you are a magician. Yeah. He's the magician, the magician. And you know the rest.
It ends
in a big, like, and so then all the other train passengers, you know, poke their head and they're like, what's going on here? Yeah. Oh, this man, he's a magician. He's a magician. And, you know, we end up in a dance number with a snap of your fingers.
It's so good. And actually, so right, you've mentioned some of the other train passengers.
Tell
us a little bit about them.
Well, we've got little Peggotty Sue. Peggotty is kind of a name that's fallen out of favor since the 1920s. But if you walked around New York in like 1918 or 1919 and just shouted out Peggotty, every little girl would turn their heads because, you know, you couldn't throw a stone without hitting a Peggotty in the face.
Exactly. I mean, that's where the phrase comes from.
In this show, it's a double entendre because Peggotty Sue has a peg leg. Which is just in He's the Magician when Peggotty Sue has her own little tap solo in the middle of it. You're just cheering her on. Yeah. Like, just look at that leg and that stump go. It's crazy. But so we have Peggotty Sue and her mother, Sean. Again, very strange naming conventions. I never figured out quite why she was called Sean.
I think it's Irish.
Yeah, I would believe that.
Yeah.
Sean and Peggotty Sue are also on this train together. They're actually a little starstruck by seeing Mr. Monopoly on their train because Peggotty Sue goes, "Oh, Mama, that's the man from the pasta boxes." And she goes, "Now don't point, Peggotty Sue. It's bad manners." And so they kind of have that like nice little interaction with Monopoly. It's really sweet. Yeah. I think they're a nice, you know, secondary couple. They were played by a comedy vaudeville duo of the time, not by a child and a mother, but like it was two adult men playing these roles, and so. You know, there's some comedy there in the drag of it all. That was their shtick. That was just kind of what they did. Yeah, they were called Flamille and Flamille were the performers' names.
The Flamille brothers.
The Flamille brothers. Yeah. Of course you remember them.
Yeah, of course. Like, some of my biggest choreography inspirations, actually, are the Flamille brothers.
Yeah, and, you know, Johnny Flamille with his peg leg. And that's why, you know, this part was written for him of Peggotty Sue.
Peggotty Sue.
So this was really, I think... not quite their big break, but this is where they really, really started landing in that musical theater kind of Thunderdome.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, what a career they had.
Yeah.
What was their other big one that they did?
Oh, of course. The Flamille brothers. Jimmy, I'm surprised you don't remember this. They were in Your Arugula Is Mine.
Yes.
Your Arugula Is Mine. Such a great show, too. It's really, I think they branched out. That was their Ethel Merman, Mama Rose moment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, it was revealed that Phil Flamille actually didn't have a peg leg in that show, and it was like a shtick the whole time. And he came out with both of his legs, and the audience is like, oh.
Yeah, I know.
And then, you know, he sang about arugula.
Yeah, but it was quite controversial, that one, so it was quite short-lived. Maybe we'll do that on Unsung Heroes one day as well.
Maybe we will.
Yep.
Your Arugula Is Mine.
Yeah, one, yeah.
Two.
It's an odd one. It's an odd one. It's worth discussion, though.
It really is, but
sure.
That's another show. We're talking about Rob Roy today.
Exactly, we really are. So obviously we do get some hijinks after the, you know, some farcical moments after the dance
obviously.
Break.
Obviously, because where has the spaghetti actually gone?
Well, that's the question, and obviously we find out in the next number, Children of the Mist.
The Children of the Mist. This is a terrifying song, Jimmy. It happens almost, at least by my memory, and it's been a little while since I've seen this show, but Children of the Mist happens almost immediately after He's the Magician.
Yeah.
And Big Berth has gotten into the number because they have the train cars and the train dance along with, but suddenly the whole train comes to a grinding stop, and all the lights on the train flicker. You know, and they turn off, and the whole theater is plunged into blackness. And this was one of the first examples of sound design in theater. They didn't have amplified sound at the time,
but
they employed a bunch of orphans to create sound effects throughout the house. So you got like a surround sound experience. And so they extinguish all the lights in the house, and you just hear from the shadows. And it's the Children of the Mist. It's this really spooky song that happens entirely in blackout.
Yeah.
And it's really, I think calling it a song might be a bit of an exaggeration. Mm. It's more of like a soundscape
experience. Yeah, like a sonic experience, yeah.
Yeah, and there's some rhythmic to it.
The slurping,
and the children laughing, and there's a round to it all. But it's really terrifying. And the whole song happens, and it's just, you know, it's very nonverbal. There aren't any words in it, but then the lights snap back on. Everyone's just kind of where they were, and Rob Roy looks at Mr. Monopoly and goes, oh, it's the Children of the Mist. And blackout, and then that's where we hit intermission, actually.
Yeah.
To just leave you on that cliffhanger.
Absolutely. And it's so tense. Now, obviously, the second act speeds through. And I've only picked one song from the second act.
Of course, because it's a little, you know, there's, mayhem ensues. But I think it's not quite as well constructed as act one.
It's definitely not. I feel like... they almost intended it to be a one act, but obviously moving on to Broadway, they had to stretch it out a bit. So
they had to flush it out a little bit.
You know, a couple of other silly little
tuners
numbers
here and there.
But really, it's all about linking Rob Roy with these spooky Children of the Mist.
Absolutely. How does he know? How did they get there?
Exactly.
What happened to the spaghetti?
Exactly. Yeah. Which is all explained in the penultimate number. Bal Quidder.
Oh, it's such, you know, I really think it sums up this show in a way that no other song can.
Mm.
Because you have so many of these loose ends, like, will Mr. Monopoly get his spaghetti to Philadelphia?
Yep.
What happened to Lee, his wife? You know, will Rob Roy prove all the townspeople wrong by piloting Big Bertha? Will Peggily make it? Who knows? And it comes together in Ball Quitter just wonderfully. Monopoly has obviously gone into a rage because his life savings of spaghetti is missing.
Yeah.
And he's taking it out on everyone. And he's kind of taken control over the train. And he's like, I'm going to stop at this train until we find my spaghetti. In my totally, totally appropriate Italian accent, which isn't offensive at all.
No, but you're just being authentic, you know, to the show. That's exactly what it sounds like on a cast recording.
It was played by a British actor, too, who was equally as bad as me. But so he's kind of locked himself in the conductor's cabins, and Rob Roy is on the other side of the door and is trying to convince him, like, hey, man, you know, this is really important to all of us, and we really are going to need your help to make this trip a success. Mm. And Rob Roy goes back and actually continues the dream story he began to tell with Annabelle from the very beginning. They were on their way to Ball, Kentucky.
Mm.
It was, you know, a long journey for a New York commuter train. But Rob Roy, he was a maverick. He sure was. And Annabelle doesn't seem like she's going to be able to make it. She's not going to be able to pull through. And he's like, hey, we're going to make it to Ball, Kentucky. You can't be a ball quitter here. We're just going to have to make this journey complete. And so we kind of hear that ball quitter turn into like a metaphor of, you know, moving forward and not being a quitter and not giving up on something.
Yeah.
And it turns into a beautiful duet between Monopoly and Rob Roy.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they were ball quitter. I will not be a ball quitter. I even need to use the shitter. Yeah. And so I must leave this train compartment. It's really moving.
Yeah,
it's strange that, again, we've been a little scatological in this musical, but maybe that'll just be an unsung hero's trope.
I think it is, but I think it's just, I think if you really look at any musical, you'll see the poo.
That could be our slogan, Jimmy.
Yeah, you'll see it. You'll see it. And it's there. So what a beautiful, beautiful way to kind of round off an extremely exciting
It really is.
Musical.
You know. And then of course, they find the spaghetti.
Yeah.
It just so happened that Peggily had been hiding it. And this Children of the Mist was actually a concoction of her mind. And she just thought it was a little fun game that she was going to play.
Yep.
And her mother, Sean, is, of course, not pleased, but in that, like, oh, you kind of way.
I know.
And so
you can't be annoyed at Peggity.
Right. And, you know, Bertha arrives in the station in Philadelphia. Monopoly is reunited with Lee, who actually walked the whole way there because the train took a long time. And, you know, they have a big spaghetti feast in honor of the wonderful time they had on 16-wheeler Birth.
Yep. So good. And at the heart of it all is obviously
praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Rob Roy.
Obviously. Of course.
Exactly. Well, Tommy, thank you so much for taking us through that, because that was a beautiful trip down memory lane.
It's amazing this musical isn't popular with more people.
I know.
It really has a through line of a plot, and you know, there's just nothing extra in it. It all needs to be
all there. Yeah, really, and highly experimental. for its time.
Very, especially for the 20s.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It really paved the way, paved the track.
It really laid the track. Put down those ties for those future shows.
Okie dokie. So...
I'm 100% right.
It's literally exactly that. Yeah, even the date, 1920. So no, you couldn't be more wrong. But
that somehow pleases me.
Yes. Do you know who Rob Roy is?
He sounds Scottish or Irish.
Yes.
And I also, between Oh the Lee and Ball Quitter, which I think I've misread some of these things.
Ever so slightly.
Seems like he's something from the Highlands up there somewhere.
Yes, indeed. So Rob Roy, and I was quite worried that he might be more of an American treasure.
No, never heard of him. No,
you know, like our Mel Gibson, William Wallace style thing. Okay. You know. Uh-huh. Have you seen Braveheart?
Yes,
it's a like documentary, pretty much.
But they just filmed it.
It's just literally that's it. So no, but we're going back to those times. Rob Roy was one of the kind of heroes of the Jacobite Rebellion,
which you'll know all about. So I was off by a couple centuries,
just one or four, but that's fine. So basically, this is kind of a chronicling of the end of his life. Rob Roy, the musical. And actually, the reason why I chose it is because... so I've kind of spoken about this before in the main podcast, but one of the things that always upsets me is that there's not enough Scottish musical theatre.
Right? Is this Scottish musical theatre?
This is Scottish musical theatre through and through. It's hilarious. It is... fantastic, and it's a great example, and it's much more authentic than Brigadoon.
No way. I refuse to believe that.
To believe Brigadoon that that's even possible.
Also a documentary.
Pretty much. But do you want to know what the coolest thing about this is?
Absolutely.
The original production, so it premiered at the Edinburgh Fringe in 2006. The original production was directed by Len Carew.
No way!
Which is hilarious.
That's wonderful.
So yeah, so it's a group of Canadians.
Side note, have you ever Googled Len Carew's teeth?
Yeah, well, we've done this together before.
Oh, we have done this together. Okay.
They're beautiful.
Great.
Yeah. I mean, that's what friends do. So it's a group from Canada. It was written by a guy called David Warwick.
Okay.
And he did book, music, and lyrics.
Wow, he pulled a Lynn Malloy.
He did indeed. He did indeed. He knows what he's doing. But apparently he's one of Canada's most produced composers.
Oh, good for him.
So good on you, David Warwick.
Based on this so far, I'm surprised I don't know this show.
Well, no. No, you're okay. You're fine. It didn't exist beyond the Edinburgh Fringe in 2006. Okay. So I'd be surprised if you knew it. Apparently they did try and mount a production in Canada, but the recession or something made it all fail. So
okay,
well, there you go.
Huh.
But I love that it takes a Canadian to write a Scottish musical.
No, it takes a Canadian for a lot of things.
Absolutely. So let's go through. Let's go through this. So obviously, you picked out the right main character,
Rob Roy.
Correct.
I was glad he was a person.
Well, because I wonder, because there is so there's like obviously the movie with Jessica Lange and I think Liam Neeson.
Okay.
And there's also like an opera.
Because there, I could also see like Rob Roy being a place.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought you were going to... Because see when you said Rob Roy, I was like, I've got him. I don't know where this is going to go. But there's also a cocktail, like a Rob Roy.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, which is like a whiskey cocktail.
That'll make an intro sometime soon.
Yes. Hey, it should. But yeah, so that I think the cocktail was made in honor of the opera.
Okay.
So there you go. Let's start by listening to... a bit of We Are Connected. Mm-hmm. So you were close with the trains. You got the idea of connection.
Uh-huh.
Well done for pulling that out. there. So this is the opening. There's a bagpipe prelude, kind of like the organ prelude in Sweeney, but naturally, bagpipes because we're Scottish, isn't it? So this is We Are Connected. Enjoy.
We are connected from the future through the present to the past by a line unbroken. Mothers to daughters and fathers to sons understand, though there's no word spoken. One needs the other to be.
I am into this.
Are you hooked?
I am. I will say, fathers are connected to daughters, and fathers are connected to sons. Mothers are not involved.
No, mothers to daughters, father to. But I think I think she moved away from the mic during the recording of that.
Okay. I was like, we might be making some assumptions here.
Yeah, just only fathers involved. That's what it was like in the Jacobite days, though.
Does everyone sing like they're leading a séance in?
In Scotland, yeah, that's how we do things. Yeah, you need to come visit because it's all that.
But just, I mean, like, séance all the time.
Yeah, in terms of like orchestrations and stuff, I think it's nice and like authentically folky. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it sounds fun.
Yeah. So basically, the song itself is just about legacy and the importance of telling stories and you know, carrying on tradition, etc.
Like the story of Rob Roy.
Just like the story of Rob Roy. Exactly. So, and then we get to Or the Lee.
Uh-huh. Which I imagine is not Or.
It's not the Or the
conjunction,
Lee.
it but it's be. Over the abbreviation.
It is indeed. Correct. Good. I'm quite sad there's no anthropomorphized trains in this or Italian men, I must say. But Or the Lee is a lovely, jaunty, I assume, dance number.
Uh-huh.
And you'll hear why. I'm actually going to play you the whole track, because it's 1 minute and 27 seconds long.
I'm excited. So there you go. I'll dance along with it.
I would like you to show me some dance.
You can picture it, listeners.
Yeah.
How great a dancer I am.
Exactly. Maybe in the future we'll do like a video podcast. When we got into full screen, that's when we can make this happen. So here is Or the Lee. Are you ready?
They can pass all the laws and pretend that we're beaten, but we all know better, and one day they'll see. For every man that they've taken, another stronger and eager will come o'er the lee.
Is this Scrooge McDuck?
Yes.
They may gather their armies with crisp fancy uniforms. We won't be frightened,
tricky way.
They are destiny. Is to believe that whatever befalls us, another proud Scotsman will come o'er the lee.
Interesting subject matter to be so jaunty.
Exactly. This is a running theme of Rob Roy, by the way. That was expertly done, Jimmy.
Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, you'll find that that's a theme, contrasting like, content to music.
Am I reading this song right? For every like war man they send across, we'll send across another Or the Lee.
Yes, uh-huh. And
like, we will fight them for everyone who dies.
I'm pretty sure that the Lee is like a river.
Okay, I believe that.
I think that's right.
You mean it's not the fiancé slash wife of a spaghetti tycoon?
It's not. No, I'm sorry. Okay, so it's an open field or meadow.
Okay.
So there you go. So, yeah, but I think it's like... In fact, interesting, you know, we were talking a bit about like sectarianism in sports, as we do. So I think it's like that kind of idea of like a group of lads getting together and be like, here, we're going to hump you, kind of thing.
It's like Black and Red. It's, you know, it's the we will continue to fight them.
Yeah, exactly. Like a rousing number. But it just happens to be a little like light jaunty Kaylee with some clapping. Exactly. I just love that the claps are they put in the claps there. So you know that this is a dance number.
That they are indeed clapping.
Between all men. So I'll tell you a little bit about the actual story of Rob Roy. So basically, he was a landowner.
Okay.
Borrowed some money in order to start like a cattle farm. He was very good with cattle. So he borrowed money from the Duke of Montrose. And basically, so the he'd given the money to someone who worked for him or something. I don't know. And that guy had then run away with the money. And so the Duke of Montrose then started like a manhunt on Rob Roy. And he became an outlaw. And like this spanned over like 10 years.
So he's like an outlaw of legend at that point.
Exactly. And so he was always pursued. Sometimes he was captured, but he would always escape. But it was always kind of for the Jacobite cause. And that basically that just means they didn't like the English.
Got it.
That's what you need to know about that word. And he also had his lover, probably wife, Mary McGregor. Can't get more of a Scottish name than that. And you kind of see their relationship twinkle through. So moving on to Annabelle number six.
Which I'm so curious
about. Sorry, that was a kind of purposeful curveball. So there are actually seven Annabelles in the total. In the show.
Are these transitions?
These are transitory songs sung by Annabelle, who is a woman, I think.
Not a train?
No, sadly not. but same with the change. There's not vast amounts of reading material on this. I think this will probably be a theme in Unsung Heroes. Lots of conjecture. But no, this is Annabelle. And she's the same woman that opened up We Are Connected. And
she's the séance leader,
that's probably what she is. So here is Annabelle number six. This is my favorite one. Okay, and you'll kind of, again, very short, play the whole thing, 26 seconds. You'll kind of get an idea of her tone.
A little advice from Annabelle. When you hide in a cave, make sure it's not populated by the people pursuing you.
So that's well worth a whole song, isn't it?
I'm going to make that my ringtone.
I think you should. So these
are all of her songs filled with very banal advice?
Yes. Or just like, we're going from this location to this location.
Da da da.
That's it. That'd be it.
Da da da.
Exactly. But interestingly enough, they do all sound different. It's not like, oh, it's Annabelle's theme. They do all sound, but they're all equally.
So they chose peculiar. That theme specifically for the Don't Hide in a Cave transition.
Yes, exactly, because it's very cave-like. Yeah, there you go, jinx. So that's Annabelle, and she pops up. I don't think she actually serves any purpose in the story. I think she is just our narrator.
All right.
But she's probably a good comedy character. I imagine. Get some chuckles.
I could picture a young Angela Lansbury playing Annabelle.
She'd be great, Tommy. She'd be absolutely fantastic. So sadly, no Peggy Sue. But we do then go into he's a magician. So now you know, I'm interested though. Now
he's
you know,
a magician he's or he's a, the magician?
He's a, yeah.
Okay, I might have written down he's the magician again with my definite article.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a big theme in Rob Roy, the train musical. So now you know about Rob Roy, the actual...
Is this about, like, him escaping?
Yeah, it is pretty much. So I've been trying to find out who sings this. And I can't work out what the character is. The only thing I've seen is that he's a balladeer.
Okay.
But that doesn't make sense.
No.
At all.
Especially with Annabelle already being...
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, but he's definitely against Rob Roy.
Okay.
So, we'll work it out, I guess. Here is... He's a magician. Now, this is our Candor and Ebb style, you know, this is the one where it's like David Warwick is stretching his writing muscles.
Okay.
Just listen for some great lyrical
I'm excited genius. To hear what rhymes with jishin.
Well, lower your estimations.
He's a magician!
Oh, sorry, I will just say it. He's gone up the octave. He starts down the octave, but he's gone up for...
He's a magician without the cape. Ha! He's a magician! He will escape. Bottomless may be your pet. There'll be something in his kit that will let the wizard flee before you can declare his history. He's a magician. He does it well. He's a magician. He'll cast a spell. You'll feel disgust as you're forced to eat his magic dust. Do not give him any breaks. Throw him in a vat of snakes. He has got the stuff it takes. He's a magician.
Oh, that's fun.
He's a magician.
The best bit.
Oh man, I was gonna discount that, but breaks, snakes, and was it takes?
Yep. That, great Scottish accent there, Tommy. Well done.
Thank you. I've been practicing. I'm always in for a good surprise triple rhyme, especially when you've been setting me up with double rhymes. But then a rhyme that only works in brogue.
Yep. Gotta love it.
Actually breaks, snakes, and takes.
They do, yeah. It's
they
not
do.
That
good. Yeah, the other one, which I already forgot, doesn't work.
No, I without. Mean, so I do have them here. Hang on. I hand-typed these lyrics. That's how dedicated I am.
I had to do the same thing for the change.
Yeah.
For a bunch of places.
So yeah, I mean, there's loads in there. He's a magician. He'll get away. Now you see him, now you can't. Yes, of course. Yet, of course, you're vigilant.
Okay.
Yep.
Huh.
But you're up against the best. He'll have you looking east as he goes west.
Ooh.
Oh. he's a magician and you are not. He's a magician. There is no not. That he can't undo.
Okay.
Right? Or a door he can't go through. Tie him
he's
to
a
the
magician.
No. Yep. Oh. Yeah, they do this a lot as well of like, there is no not. He can't und. Like, you know.
Finishing the line at the next sentence.
Which.
Or the sentence in the next line. Yeah.
Works well for poetry, not so well for lyric. Nah,
like maybe once in a lyric. Yeah.
Yep. But he does, and I find this very impressive. Loves a challenge, give him one. Toss him in a garrison.
Ooh.
I think
that's fun.
Any including a garrison in your show is
I am impressive. Disappointed they didn't rhyme anything with magician.
Yes, no, that's just far too much, Tommy.
Not a mortician.
That would be good.
Doesn't have to audition.
Yep. But then you're being anachronistic and, you know, we're not here for that.
We are all connected, Jimmy.
So true.
Fathers and sons and fathers and daughters.
Yep. But the one that I don't quite understand, throw him in a vat of snakes. I don't know whether that's like an Indiana Jones reference or...
I mean, you wouldn't want to be thrown in a vat of snakes, would you?
No, but we're in Scotland. We don't have snakes. So,
is it because St. Patrick drove them all out, or is that just an Irish thing?
That would be just an Irish thing.
Maybe he went for a quick jaunt over
and just picked up some snakes. There's probably some deep backstory there that
be the other way around. You would have more snakes because they were all driven
away. Yeah, who knows? I'm sure someone out there will tell us. So yeah, that was obviously the fantastic He's a Magician. Beautiful rhymes there. Now we're moving into Children of the Mist. So this is actually, I mean, to be honest, I really like the sound of your Children of the Mist. I love a good sonic experience. Very Dave Malloy. This is a bit more traditional, but another good example of music not necessarily matching content.
Okay.
So I'm just going to preface this by saying this is a battle song.
Okay.
And the pipers were piping, and the swords were drawn, and again they marched in the first light of dawn, and the battle to end all the battles began.
Very Jekyll and Hyde. Yes.
Children of the Mist are we. We're watching here but may not see. These stories of passion and stories of history inside these hearts that were told in their fashion with voices of mystery so much a part of our lives. We inherit a long tradition, fierce and proud. We're willing to battle the forces of evil surrounding us here.
We've broken through,
my lad,
but we've not seen all of them yet. There's more to come. Many more, but never enough. Not this time. Come on then, after them.
If you're fighting just one, and you're fighting us all. Every daughter and son will respond to the call.
Rob, where are the Spanish?
We sent them to shore up the left flank. We didn't want the redcoats getting behind us.
Bloody hell, they're everywhere.
My favourite. I only held on that long just for that guy. He said, bloody hell, they're everywhere. Just great. I mean, you have to remember, these people are Canadian.
Yeah.
So this is impressive.
That they can do Scottish accents?
Yes, not many can.
It is, what, it's a very complex meter. That's in like 6 or like 12 or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is, I don't know. That's a battle song? Like they fight on stage?
Yeah, so well, I don't really know.
It's not like we're in the village nearby while the battle's happening over there or something.
No, I think it's very much like we are the children of the mist. We are the ones who will fight against the uprising, blah 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 blah. I'm intrigued to see how that was staged by Lane Carrier. But there is some great, they rhyme, like they're a lovely internal rhyme of proud and surrounding. And I know it's not exact, but I really appreciate it. So that's one of my faves. I really like Children of the Mist. And then we finally find our way to Balquhidder.
I think, again, I may have misinterpreted the name of this song.
I think you might have slightly. but if you tell you what, Tommy, if you can spell Balquhidder.
Oh, God. Does it have like a G-H in it or something?
There's no G-H. But there is an H. So if you can spell Balquhidder, I will
concede. No points
instantly.
Here. Nope.
Just give it a go. Just give it a little go.
Correct. O.
Nope.
B A.
Yep.
U H. B A H. B A.
We're just going to stop
the most exciting part of the podcast.
It really is Tommy spelling. So B A L Q U H I D D E R. Balquhidder. I think that's easy. You know? So it's actually a place in Scotland.
Okay.
And was the death place of Rob Roy and Mary McGregor. Mm. And you can go visit their grave in Balquhidder.
Mm. Are people always singing when you go there?
Oh, we're just singing everywhere you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
I forget that that's a Scottish thing.
Exactly. It's what we get up to. So it's in Stirlingshire. So yes, when you eventually come over to Scotland, we'll take a trip there because I know you'll really want to see it.
Absolutely. So, and I will sing my song about Rob Roy, the train conductor.
The ball quitter.
The ball quitter.
Is there actually a place called Ball? Where was it? Ball?
No, Kentucky? No, I don't think so.
Ball, Kentucky. I believed you, though. Well done. You were very convincing.
Thank you.
So, Rob Roy has now died. And he's
Did he die in the battle?
No, he didn't, actually. Oh. Which you'd think, you know, that
would be more dramatic.
Yeah, exactly. But no, he just left and went to Ball Quitter. Because he got reprieved of the crime eventually. And then just lived out the rest of his life in Balkabal.
Doing magic at children's parties.
Just doing magic. He loves it for the children of the mist. So this is post-death, where he's reunited with Mary, who died before him. It's a lovely little love ballad.
Who's Mary? Oh, his love.
His lover.
It seems like only yesterday spoke of growing old.
Who'd have thought it would arrive to find us unprepared? One day we simply turned around and felt a kind of cold
we'd never felt before. So why are we not scared? Perhaps we simply recognize the beauty of this place.
You look in each direction, and the hand of God is there.
And you and me together, side by side and face to face.
Okay, there it is.
Yeah, exactly.
They, like, set me up for a rhyme.
Right.
It's like some place, something, something, the hand of God is
there.
There.
No, but this is what makes me think that, that you wrote it as a poem. Do you know? Because that would, you know, go like an A,
it'd
B,
be long,
right. A.
And you wouldn't have the added underscoring that, like, sets you up for this to be a resolution.
Right.
Resolution,
you know what I mean?
In the words.
They're connected musically, but not rhythmically. How'd you say rhymically?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Through rhyme? Yeah, I don't know.
I guess. Let's not be wankers. So yeah, I don't know. But hey, some would call that revolutionary.
Yep.
You know? And also, it's a lovely sentiment. It's very true. But as us Scots, we feel very proud of our scenery.
As it should be. It's very pretty.
Thank you very much.
I've only seen pictures.
Yeah, and so we always feel that, you know, everything, the land is touched by God's hand and that is very much there.
And that doesn't need to rhyme with space.
It doesn't. Absolutely not. And then the show ends with a reprise of We Are Connected, obviously.
Of course.
So there you go. And that is Rob Roy, the musical.
That sounds not half bad. I might need to go listen to the whole thing.
I think it's worth a look. There's some other nice moments. I feel like I picked most of them just because of the titles. But there's a really good trio called Weave a Duty. Really good, really good male trio. You often get a male trio.
No.
It's on Spotify. Everyone, go check it out.
We'll put a link in the show notes too, so you can click on it right now.
Exactly. But time is to come, Tommy.
Time has come.
For you to lip sync for your life.
And doubt. No. So, if you go online, you can vote for whose musical was better.
Yep.
Did you like my musical, Rob Roy, the train conductor of 16-wheel Bertha? Or Jimmy's musical?
Rob Roy, the musical. One of the only Scottish musicals in existence. And a good example of Scottish musical theatre.
It sounds very authentic.
Yes, it is. And I applaud them on their accents. Very much so.
For Canadians. Yeah. Voting will be on Twitter. There's a link in the show notes. You can go right now and vote. And we're keeping track of who's winning.
Yep. I wonder if it will be me. Or maybe it will be you.
Those do seem like the only options, don't they?
Potentially.
Yes,
we'll be back with another Unsung Heroes very, very soon. But in the meantime, have a good life.
Goodbye.
And remember, we're all connected.
Watch out for the children of the mist.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.